This is CliffCentral.com.
It is time for Anthea Gardner. And she works hard for the money. So, Anthea, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Gareth.
Good.
How are you this morning?
Well, I'm very, very relieved that we weren't downgraded.
Oh, I think the whole country is relieved.
Sure.
Big sigh on Friday night.
They say hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. What were you preparing?
So we were probably expecting the rand to be a bit weaker, but you know we're rand hedged, generally speaking, in our portfolios. Mm-hmm. So we were thinking we'd be fine. The rand, of course, did strengthen to 15.10 on Friday. Two things, though. It was also the non-farm payrolls number that drove it on Friday.
Right.
But yes, huge relief that we weren't downgraded. We remain triple B minus, negative outlook.
Which is not great either.
But no, we're still just one level above sub-investment grade or junk status. So they've given us a reprieve until December. I don't think our work is done yet. There's lots still to do. They could easily downgrade us again in December or early next year. And there are a couple of things that they've said that they need for us to maintain our status. And I think the biggest is probably if we fall below 0.6% GDP growth for this year and below 1.5% for next year, then chances are we will get downgraded.
Right.
You know, they said we need to keep our political tensions in check. Those were their words. They've also said that we need to successfully conclude this new mining legislation, and that they want to see that labor reforms will remain kind of in line and not go out of whack. And then the last thing, they've said that if per capita wealth falls in USD terms, we're likely to get a downgrade. And that's interesting because it's not just about production or economic growth. It's also about the rand and whether or not the rand strengthens or weakens. If the rand weakens too much, obviously, by default, our per capita wealth will fall in US dollar terms. So, yeah, we've got our work cut out for us until December.
Yeah, so we're over the hill this time, but there are more hills ahead.
Lots more. I'm not convinced.
I heard Pravin Gordhan talking on Saturday, and he said, you know what he's trying to do is he's getting out there, and you said he's doing a marketing job, but effectively he wanted people to realize also that it is an election year. I don't know what he meant by that.
That's interesting.
And that because it's an election year, things are a little more unstable, and people say things and. You know, there's obviously...
It's very short-termism, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I guess we're lucky in that the elections are in August and the next review is in December. So it gives us some time. But, I'm worried.
This is sort of like you've got a delinquent child and you send them to school. And you just know that the report's going to be horrible every time it comes home. And then when you go to parents' evening, the teachers say, look, your kid is a problem. That's kind of how that's how it feels being, on the South African economy ship.
That's right. It does. You're right. That's a good analogy. And you're worried that the child's going to be held back next year, right?
Or exactly. Yeah. And you can't. And you're running out of school fees. Anyway. Oh. All right.
That's the other thing they said, by the way. Talk about school fees. They said that they didn't want debt to be more than 60% of GDP. And that, of course, I mean, that leads into so many things because that points to the SOEs, the state-owned enterprises, and we all know that Eskom's borrowing money.
Yeah, left, right, and center.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oy vey. All right. Well, let's try to keep our heads above water and let's try to keep optimistic about this.
Well, I tell you what, on Friday, talk about being, optimistic, is that the market was actually up. So 85 basis points, even though the rand went from about 15.60 at one stage to 15.10 at one stage, it's kind of leveled out about 15.15 now. Mm-hmm. The market was still up. So... very positive. Resources were up 3%. Gold were incredibly strong. Harmony Gold was up 10%. Goldfields 9%. Financials stronger. Industrials all basically across the board, which is fantastic. Our favorite share for the moment, Sun International,
was
up 8% during the day. It closed 6% higher. And it's set for its biggest, or it was, its biggest three-day gain since, I don't know, forever, 6 years or something ridiculous.
That's impressive.
So on the 9th of May, the share was trading 68.81. It's now trading 81.65. And I think investors are just cottoning on to what we spoke about a couple of weeks ago, the approval of the Latin American business, the Sun Dreams deal, and the fact that now Menlyn Main is going to add 30 Rand to the share, which is what, at this stage, 40%? No, how bad is my math? No.
All right. Like, would you still be interested in buying now, or do you think that you've missed out?
I think I would still buy. It's a... So I didn't expect it to jump so quickly, to be honest. And I think there's still a lot more to go. So you might have to be a bit patient now. So you've missed kind of the
8%
12% in total, more than.
Sure, okay.
Yeah. But if you hold on, and next year when Menlyn Main comes on board, hopefully that'll give it a boost as well.
Okay.
And then Illovo Sugar reported on Friday. Really not a great set of results, but we weren't expecting much more. So revenue declined only marginally by barely 1%. But the problem, of course, is headline earnings per share was down by 36.5%. And that's the number we always look at, you know, taking out the once-off effects or the accounting anomalies. So headline earnings down. Now, this is a share, if you remember correctly, which is being bought by Associated British Foods. And these are the guys that own Primark. They've got sugar businesses in Brazil, Spain, China. So they're all over the place, really. They already own 51% of Illovo. And this is a cash deal of not completely cash, but the cash portion is 5.6 billion rand. So I think that'll give it a nice boost. But the concern here is that if ABF do buy Illovo, that they are likely to delist them from the JSE, which is a shame. We seem to be losing kind of companies, you know, SAB Miller and all these kind of South African companies. They also didn't declare a dividend, which we don't like. So the same story, cash strapped and watching them carefully. It's always tempting to buy a company that is being taken out just because they generally pay up. Like, look, SAB Miller was the perfect example, right? It went from 650 to 975 rand a share, or if somebody else comes and wants to buy it. But I think this time that, like, ABF are probably on their own, and so I'm not going to buy it at this stage. I'm going to stay away from it, even though sugar generally probably is on its lows and it'll help boost Illovo. I'm going to stay away from it for a while.
All right.
And then on Friday, well, actually, it was probably Wednesday, Old Mutual announced that Bruce Hemphill, who's the CEO, and he's just barely been in the job for a year, is set to get a bonus of 200 million rand for breaking up the business into four parts.
You're joking. Is that all? He had to break something and then he gets 200 million?
And he's not been in the job for even a year, practically.
What's this job again and how do I apply?
So you'd have to move to the UK.
Okay, well, fine.
Oh, you'll take
200 million. Are you kidding? Sure.
And you would have to sell off Old Mutual, which is a great South African company built up over many years, and break it down
into
four parts.
That's what's called Old Mutual. It's very old,
You'd have to break it into four parts and sell it off to the rest of the world.
Great.
You want to do that?
Done.
Right, you get 200 million rand.
Thank you.
So Old Mutual started trading in London in 1999. And in the 17 years that it's been trading, the stock in London has only gone up about 13%, making it the third worst performer in the FTSE 350 life insurance index. In fact, it's the second worst performing insurer on the LSE, the London Stock Exchange, after Clientele. However, in South Africa, it's quite the opposite. Like, in South Africa, the share's up over 50%, I think, in the same period. So, and this, of course, is just a currency translation. So there you go. And Bruce Hemphill's getting paid 200 million rand in bonuses because, which is, by the way, 10 times his basic salary. Because they're saying they're replacing, he's working himself out of a job, basically. That's what he's doing. And so they're replacing 3 years of rewards, in inverted commas. So they're assuming that over the 3 years, that's what he's going to make.
Wow,
and it looks like it's going to go through because they had a meeting with the biggest shareholders, the PIC, the Public Investment Corporation, Sanlam, Alan Gray, and Coronation.
Yeah.
And it looks like they've actually approved it. Which I find very interesting because the PIC are always complaining about South African companies going offshore or being replaced or delisted. So, yeah.
Well, the PIC has got its own agenda. Let's not even get into that.
Exactly.
Anthea, we've talked about these non-farm payrolls already a couple of times. This is basically an indicator of the health of the employment.
The U.S. economy.
Yeah. Well, the U.S. economy, but also the employment figures in the U.S.
Yeah, the labor force.
Right.
Okay.
So how are we looking?
So on Friday, well, we talk about it once a month, by the way. On Friday, the number came out very disappointing. 38,000 jobs were created. So there's a couple of things that I guess would impact this number. And one of them is that Verizon Mobile Telecoms mm-hmm. company, they were on strike.
Yeah.
And so they said that's why the number was so low. If you remember, towards the end of last year, beginning of this year, the U.S. was creating 150,000 new jobs. So for the number to be 38,000 on Friday is very disappointing. However, I calculated that even without the Verizon strike, they would only have created 72,000 jobs. And Janet Yellen, in the last couple of weeks, her and her team, basically, and all the governors, have been saying that what they need is for the U.S. to be creating 100,000 jobs per month. And then they'd feel comfortable with raising interest rates, and they thought they were going to be raising interest rates, and now this number comes out, and it's shocking.
Yeah.
And this is partly what drove the strength of the rand on Friday as well, because obviously the dollar just weakened, because now it looks less likely all of a sudden that they're going to raise interest rates in June. What's interesting about this, though, is that the unemployment number in the U.S. came down from 5% to 4.7%, and they definitely were looking for something below 5% as a justification for raising interest rates. So the 4.7 is kind of an indicator that they're allowed to. But I think what's the problem there is that, or not the problem, the what drove this number lower, the unemployment number, was that actually people are dropping out of the labor force. And it's not a complete, perfectly smoothed number, if you like. It's kind of a blip.
But if people are dropping out of the labor force, what are they doing?
So it could be because of age or because they've stopped looking, or there could be all sorts of, you know, things that impact it. And of course, the health of the labor force is also measured by the average wage.
Yeah.
And the average wage increase now, year on year increase, is about 2.5%. And the U.S. is looking for between 3 and 3.5% to get to this inflation target of 2%. That's kind of what it's all about. They want to see inflation. They want to see the economy growing. And 2% target inflation is where they're at. So they're trying to push inflation higher, which was partly what all the free money was kind of in quantitative easing way back when. And it just didn't help, did it?
No.
Yeah.
But also, you know, I suppose a lot of people in government at the moment, the Obama administration in particular, wanted to show that unemployment is on its way down.
Yes.
And clearly, if you're only growing by 30,000 jobs, it's not looking so great.
No, it's really not.
I mean, in the whole of the United States, 38,000 jobs.
Yeah.
Not great.
Not at all, no.
So it's stagnant.
I think in June we'll probably see a bounce because the Verizon people will come back, and, you know, there'll be a couple of seasonal issues that kind of show again. So it'll be higher in June, I think.
Right. And
remain to be seen.
And Donald Trump will say that it's not good enough, and Hillary will say nothing, and that's how it's going to work now. No, we figured it out. We're ahead of this.
Covered.
Now, the other big political thing, and we said that we wanted to actually have a proper discussion about this with you, is what's going on with this Brexit?
Okay. This is a big issue, though. There are so many factors, and I don't think I can cover them all, but I can touch on a few.
All right.
So now the polls are showing that 52% of Brits want out of the European Union and only 48% want to stay in. 9 out of 10 economists are saying that if Britain leaves the EU, then it'll be bad for the economy. I mean, there's all sorts of numbers being bandied around. So looking like, on average, and kind of general consensus, is that it'll wipe 2.3% off GDP growth, which is huge. I mean, for us, we'd go straight into recession. In fact, I think they might even, because they're not at 2% yet, are they?
No.
Mm,
I don't think so.
They might be.
All right. So this is if they exit.
Yes, exactly. It'll come off the economy.
Why do they want to exit? What are the benefits for them as far as they're concerned for leaving?
Yeah, that is such a good question. So I think it's just part of kind of an idea that somebody posted, and off they go, and they took it, and here they go. And so government really is fighting to remain in. Yeah. I mean, what this points to, it's two things, really. It's about economics, and it's emotive. So the EU was formed post-World War II when they said, well, we need to stand together, we need to grow the economy, we must stop the war.
I mean, it was the European Economic Community in the beginning.
That's right. Yes.
They only much later decided in the 90s that they were going to consider a unified currency, the euro.
That's right. Yeah, so that was 15 years ago, mm-hmm. right? They implemented 16 years ago.
And Britain has always remained on the pound. And they didn't want to join the euro as a currency. And they also have there's so many political things going on in Europe at the moment that make Europe not such a sexy thing to be joining.
Yeah.
For Britain. And they've benefited from a lot of the decisions early on by, for example, not going for the euro currency. That's why the British pound is so strong. They've managed to ride an interesting wave. But now people are saying, well, either you're in or you're out. And this decision, if they go out, will have far-reaching, wide-ranging implications, you say, for their own economy inside, but also for the European economy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Are we more in favor of, just let's be completely mercenary about this. If you, Anthea Gardner, have shares in the London Stock Exchange, are you hoping for the Brexit to happen, or are you hoping for them to remain in there?
I do have shares. We have a company called Capital & Counties, mm-hmm. which is a property business that owns property kind of in the central London area. And for me, I would prefer they remained in the European Union. But I think, Gareth, there's so much more. It's about how much you're paying to be in the European Union and whether or not its exports will increase or decrease. So the cost of being in the European Union, apparently for every £1 paid in tax, a little over 1 pence goes to the European Union. Now that's what the government is saying as a way of saying, well, can we just stay in? It's not really not costing us that much. But this is a case of statistics, damn statistics and lies, because actually, depending on how you calculate it, it works out to more than 2p per pound in your tax money.
Right.
And it really is just a calculation issue, kind of, you know, expenditure versus income and what gets paid back via the European Union to the UK.
Okay.
So there's kind of that issue. And then I think the other emotive issue is the refugees and, you know, kind of people seeking asylum in Europe and then coming over to the UK. And the UK government have been really funny. They've dropped off this pamphlet in all British households, and they've listed kind of 15 things that they say, don't worry, it's fine for us to stay in the European Union. And one of them is, we control our own borders, and it gives us the right to check everyone, which is absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
But what it doesn't do is it doesn't give them the right to stop European Union members of coming and working and living in Britain. So it actually, it's almost a counter argument if you look at it deeper.
I don't understand.
So the British government are saying, it's okay, we're part of this EU, don't panic, because our borders are secure, so people can't just traverse across our borders and come and work and live and take and live on the dole.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, you know, so the British government are saying we control our own borders. But actually, sure, they're allowed to check people coming in, but they can't turn them away if they have valid EU status.
Oh, really? So in other words, it's a dead argument.
Yes, exactly.
They shouldn't be saying anything about that. They should be shutting up about it if they're smart.
If they're smart. But it's the way they market it. It's a marketing thing, right?
God.
And so a couple of other things. And the other thing is the right to live, work, or study abroad. Now, this is interesting, because if you're part of the EU, then you have the right to work, live, or study abroad, any of the 27 EU countries.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that if we leave, that will stop. But actually, that's not true, because Norway is not part of the EU, mm-hmm. and all Norwegians are allowed to live, work, and study in Europe.
Well, and Norwegians could do whatever they want. They've got a great economy. They've got all that oil.
And they're Vikings.
They're Vikings. There's just, I mean, Norway, everybody always puts Norway at the top of every list. But also, we forget that they're not in the EU.
Yeah, well, actually, it's because of they're part of the European Economic Area.
Mm-hmm.
So actually...
So that's like the envelope that everyone fits into.
Exactly. So I think this Brexit-Remain story, it's really all about how you negotiate going forward.
Mm.
So sure, let's leave Europe, but maybe we can become part of the EEA, and then we can still benefit from being able to, the kind of the open borders, if you like.
Well, 9 out of 10 economists polled said that leaving the EU will damage the economy.
That's right. Yeah, and they've said... there's a lot of argument for and against it. So yes, look, bottom line, I think it will damage the economy. I think it's not good at all. Another interesting example of this actually is the exports.
Yeah?
Yeah. So the British government have said that 8% of EU exports come from the UK. So in other words, they're exporting. And that 44% of exports goes to the EU.
Yep.
But this is another crazy thing, because actually what's happened in the last 5 years is that exports to the EU have actually dropped by a nominal 11%. So a couple of years ago, it was 55%. Now it's 44%. So they're making it look like it's all a big drama that if they do leave. But actually, maybe it's not as clear cut as they're trying to make it. And there's something called the Rotterdam effect.
Where, that doesn't sound good.
Where all UK exports go via Rotterdam, well, not all, most UK exports go via Rotterdam, either into Europe or Asia or other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And they've admitted that it's very difficult to measure whether or not once they leave the EU, this will hugely drop, because they don't know exactly kind of whether or not it's going to go into Europe or whether it's going to go to Asia or America. So, again, very, very difficult to say. And I understand why economists are saying that. I do. Personally, I think it's about red tape, quite frankly. Like, if you're going to leave the EU and then you're going to have to renegotiate every single term or trade agreement, it's painful, right? It's yeah. Real. And then can I just say one last thing? Because this is very much about kind of the man in the street, the British man in the street,
yeah.
And voting, and who's saying what about whether or not they should exit or remain. And one of the big things is that next year, mobile phone roaming charges will be abolished across Europe. So if you've got a French phone, you can travel in Italy and you won't be charged roaming charges.
Excellent. I don't know why this doesn't apply worldwide.
Yeah, well.
Roaming charges are ridiculous. It's an unnecessary expense. For the average phone user.
What are they for?
Then it's made up by the networks so that they can charge you more when you're traveling. That's all.
It's
profiteering.
That annoys
Naked
me.
Profiteering.
Wow.
So they're going to abandon these charges?
Right. And for the UK customer, that's about 38 pence per minute, which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, they're saying if we aren't part of the EU, then actually we will pay this 38 cents, so we won't benefit from it. But actually, it's not true again, because if you're part of the European Economic Area, you can negotiate not to be charged roaming charges.
Let's just look at Norway and see what Norway's doing and do the same thing.
There we go.
Done. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. I hope that's helped a few people to understand. All right. Here are some questions for you. Well, Anthea, if you want to see bonuses, Whitey Basson of ShopRite gets 128 million rand basic salary and yearly 500 million rand bonus. That was about 4 years ago. I'd like to find out what it is now.
Yeah.
It's from Roscoe.
I'm very much aware of that.
Yeah, that's a good paycheck,
huge.
Right?
There are some CEOs in this country that are getting huge paychecks, but that happens the world over. And I think, you know, people are just shareholders. There's lots of activist shareholders out there who are complaining about it. And
are they?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's get some of them on the show. I want to hear from them. And then Roman says, do yourself a favor and watch Brexit, the movie on YouTube. It makes a great case for leaving the EU.
Oh, that'll be interesting. I haven't watched it. I will do. All thanks, right. Roman.
Very, very good. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thanks very much.
Cool. There's Anthea Gardner with a look at your money.
This is CliffCentral.com.